Okay, let's get started.
Oh, wait, just a minute, partner.
No.
Guess again, freak boy.
To the Batmobile. Let's go.
AudioTU.com. Another fresh picked pod from AudioTU.com. Shutters Inc. with Shelton Muller.
Hi, and welcome to episode number 11 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from AudioTU.com, and with me on the line via Skype from Melbourne, you ready for this? The sensei of the censor, Shelton Muller.
Yes,
I knew this was going to go downhill, this idea.
Look, we're going to have to find you some more adjectives. But,
how have you been?
I'm really well, mate. Absolutely. I'm tired because there's so much on at the moment. But apart from that, really well.
Oh, good. And
yourself?
Yeah, fantastic. The wedding went well?
The wedding went very well, yeah. The day was so much fun, really. Jade really enjoyed her day. And Greg and I, we had a ball because she's so photogenic. And being the niece of a photographer, she's so used to having her picture taken. Her mother's a makeup artist and her uncle's a photographer,
wow.
So you can imagine. And Jade is gorgeous to look at. So, you can imagine, she was just having a ball all day, having her picture taken, because she's had it taken since infancy. So we had a ball. The only problem was it rained right smack bang in the middle of the photo session.
No.
But that's what photographers have to cope with. And
yeah, absolutely.
We are professionals, so we basically say in a situation like that, well, this is what it is. Don't try and hide it. Make photos from it, you know, and make what it is beautiful. And that's exactly what Greg and I came up with. So what I'm going to do is email you some of the images from the wedding. If anybody's curious as to what my gorgeous niece looks like, you can check out some of the images on the AudioTU website for Shutters Inc. and Happy Snaps.
Excellent. All right. And what are we going to talk about this week?
Well, of course, in the light of the wedding and in the light of just my general photography, I thought I'd talk about available light photography. We have spoken on previous Shutters Inks about how to use flash or how to use flash effectively, stroke how not to use flash, but we haven't really spoken in detail about how to take photographs successfully in available light. So I thought I'd just outline a few of the techniques that can be simply employed to make sure your available light photos work.
For sure.
The first place, I suppose, to start is in your camera, either upgrading your ISO if you're working with a digital camera or working with, you know, fast film, 400 ISO film or 800 ISO film if you can get it. In fact, if you're shooting film, one of the best 800 ISO films you can get is the Fuji Press, which is a really fine-grained 800 ISO film that works beautifully for available light photography. Mm-hmm. But if you're shooting digitally, upright your ISO to 400 or 800. Try maybe not to go too much higher than that, but because even at those settings, you're going to get what's called a bit of noise in your pictures. Yeah, and noise is, say, perhaps the digital equivalent of grain in the high-speed films that we used to use. If you're worried about noise, by the way, you may remember that we spoke about PaintShop Pro X last week.
Mm-hmm.
PaintShop Pro X has a great noise reduction facility built within it that probably works better than Photoshop De-Speckle or any other technique that you might use. It's one of the best noise reducers I've ever seen. So it's buy that program, and if you like, you know, available light photography and you've upgraded your ISO, you can use that to just fix the noise a little bit that is inherent in some of the uprated ISO type digital pictures that you might take. You don't always have to uprate your ISO, though. I get around that by using faster lenses. I live in my 85mm 1.8.
Yeah, I can imagine.
No, it's a fabulous lens. One I didn't think that I would use anywhere near as much as I do. But on a wedding, I hardly change that lens around.
Is that right?
Oh, I live in that lens. It does almost everything. I think I used two lenses for Jade's wedding. One was the 85, and the other one was my 11-18.
Wow.
I think that was basically it with very little variation.
So the 85's a prime?
It is a prime.
Right, so that has no variable length. It's just fixed at 85mm.
And I'm so used to seeing with that lens that I know exactly where to place myself. And use it. Now, with the D100 Nikon that I use, it's the equivalent in 35mm terms of a 127mm 1.8. So it's around it's really, really nice. It's about a 2.5 times-ish magnification at 1.8. So it's a really lovely portrait lens.
Mm.
And at 1.8, the lens is built to be sharp at 1.8. and it minimizes your depth of field, so you've got nothing but your subject in focus.
Gorgeous.
And it's great to work with an available light. I don't have to uprate my ISO past 200 most of the time.
Wow.
When I'm using that lens. I've photographed concerts, you know, like stage performances at midnight using that lens and just employing the 1.8 facility and had 250th, 350th of a second, no problems.
Wow.
And that comes back to something we'll talk about in a minute, and that's metering correctly.
Yeah.
But if you can afford a fast lens, if you're going to be doing available light photography, buy one or two fast lenses. The other one that I use is my 80-200 2.8, which at 200 2.8 is...
Is that 2.8 again, across the whole range?
Across the whole range, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. And look, they're not cheap lenses, either of them. They're not cheap.
Oh, no.
If available light photography is going to be your thing, then buy one or two lenses that will enable you to do it. You know, otherwise you'll be buying a lot of zooms that go from 3.5 to 5.6 or 4.5 to 6.3, and you can't do available light photography with those lenses, not very effectively anyway. When I was in China recently, I had my 85mm 1.8, and two other people on the tour actually bought the lens in China because they loved it so much. So by the end of the tour, there were more 85mm 1.8s than what started with. And it saved their bacon on so many occasions when we were in early morning scenes or, you know, available light scenes where just flash ruins everything. So I really highly recommend a lens like that to enable you to do available light photography. But as we were saying before, metering correctly is the key.
Definitely.
In an available light situation, a lot of what you see is often quite dark. And that doesn't really matter, but what it will do is affect your metering. Your camera looks at the scene and says, gee, it's dark in here, I better open up for 3 minutes of exposure. and you're never going to be able to get a picture with that.
No.
So, but what you really need to meter for is the subject upon which you light, any light, window light or shaft of light through an opening in the ceiling, whatever it might be. The subject is what you need to meter for, and if the background is dark, well, who cares? That's what it is anyway. So I use, when I'm shooting an available light, a lot of spot metering.
Yeah.
The camera on spot metering, meter off the face, or some neutral tone within the within the subject itself.
I was just going to say that,
And you'll usually find that that's the most accurate place to meter for, and it will be 2, 3, 4 stops brighter sometimes than if you do a metering that incorporates all of the scene you might be photographing.
Yeah.
So meter correctly. If you've got a spot metering mode on your camera, and most SLR digital cameras have these days, in fact, most film SLR cameras have these days, use that. If not, then you're shooting digitally. So take a rough stab at something 2, 3 stops faster than what your meter's saying and check the screen and see if it works.
And if you are shooting with a digital SLR, which we would assume you are if you're listening to this podcast, most of them will have a bracketing function.
Yes.
An exposure bracketing function, which it'll take one frame, half a exposure stop below what it thinks is correct, one frame at what it thinks is correct exposure, and then one frame at half a stop over or something like that.
And most cameras you can set to take 3 pictures, one under, one on, one over, so that you can actually, you can vary that. So, by all means, use that facility, and you'll find it works very well for you. Another thing that I learned from a mentor who was unfortunately killed in a plane crash, Galen Rowell, is your breathing. If you're hand-holding and you are, despite all your efforts to the contrary, using a shutter speed that, well, you wouldn't normally like to hand-hold with, let's say it's an eighth, a 15th, or even a quarter of a second or less, your breathing is important.
Oh, yeah.
Hold your camera to your eye, take a deep breath in, take a very deliberate deep breath out, and at the end of that breath, you're probably at one of your stillest moments.
Yeah.
Press your shutter. In fact, Galen used to listen to his own heartbeat, and he'd press the shutter release between heartbeats. I don't know how you do that, but I think I did it once. But
the
you know.
Olympic rifle shooters do the same thing.
Do they?
They rest their trigger finger against the trigger, and they feel their own pulse from their skin pushing against the trigger, and they time the squeeze of the trigger to within inside the 2 heartbeats.
Well, there you go. There's something to that, isn't there?
And it's exactly the same as what you're saying.
There you go.
It's all shooting.
And they've got to be just as accurate.
Yeah, so, exactly.
You know, any slight movement for them and their shot's mucked up as well.
Yep.
So it must work. Tripods and monopods also. A tripod can sometimes be a bit cumbersome, but if you've got the ability to use or the facility to use a tripod, do so. One of the problems that we also encountered on our tour in China was that people brought really rubbishy little tripods. And I'm sorry, you guys, if you're listening to this, but some of you just brought awful tripods. Yeah. A tripod has to be...
solid.
Solid. You got it, Bruce. It has to be solid.
Go the Manfrotto.
Well, I took my Manfrotto to China. It's an 055, which is, you know, not a huge tripod, but it ain't no small thing either.
Yep.
And I lugged that thing through China because when I needed it, it was there.
Yep.
There were people using lightweight little tripods that were more hassle than they were worth, and caused more trouble and took more time than this Manfrotto did. So absolutely, go the Manfrotto, and set it up properly. Monopods are great if you can't, you know, lug a tripod around. They are often a lifesaver, and you'll find a lot of photographers who do concert photography, you know, rock concerts and stuff like that, often using monopods connected to their, you know, their 300 2.8s and their 80 to 200 2.8 straight on the lens.
Yep.
And that works really, really well.
You know, I've got a Manfrotto myself. I couldn't tell you the model number, but it's, the big 1.8 meter job. And even though it's a big heavy mother, I'll quite often use that as a monopod. Just extend one leg only. Mm-hmm. And I find that really good.
Yes, that's a very, it's quick to move and doesn't, you know, you don't have to spread the legs out, but you've still got stability. Very good idea. The other accessory that you could buy is one of those little fold-out reflectors. If you're shooting with window light, you can actually increase the amount of light falling on your subject by reflecting a lot of it back. Often window light is beautiful, but it can be very contrasty on the dark side.
Yep.
Especially if you've had to put your subject very close to the window. The closer you are to the window, often the more contrast there is. So either pull your subject away from the window to reduce contrast, or put them, you know, the problem with that, of course, is there's less light on the subject.
Yeah. And half of the time, the window might be part of what you want to capture as well.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. So get a reflector. I mean, you can buy these fold-out reflectors fairly cheaply, and they're worth their weight in gold. They usually have a white side and a silver side, or maybe a silver side and a gold side. The gold side's beautiful for really enhancing, you know, flesh tones.
Yep.
But more importantly, they just can throw so much light back into a scene that allows you to do available light portraits, and you just get an assistant or, you know, lean it up against something, and you'll find that it can often be a godsend to do available light portraiture, or even, as I did recently, some available light product work that, you know, I needed to do. It was fabulous. And just a few of those accessories and techniques means that, you know, you can shoot very successfully without difficulty in available light situations. So many amateur photographers and enthusiast photographers consider available light photography to be very difficult. It isn't really. It isn't. And it should be employed a lot more because, as we've often said on Shutters Inc., straight flash is one of the worst things you can do to a photograph.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, your portrait of Max you showed us a few weeks ago with window light.
Yeah.
Gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous. And was it difficult to do?
No. I think, as I said at the time, it was pretty much a snap. I was sitting on one couch, he was on the other.
Yep.
And I just sort of looked up at him and saw what gorgeous light was there and just you know, quickly set it on, I think it was on shutter priority, and at about a 30th or a 60th of a second or something, and went snap while I thankfully managed to get that far before he lost that beautiful smile and went into his fake smile.
Right.
Yeah, so there really wasn't any posing of that shot whatsoever, you know.
Well, of course, we're on the subject. You have the advantage of the Konica Minolta 7D at your fingertips, so you have
its anti-shake
built in. Now, there's another great idea for available light photography. Get yourself a Konica Minolta to 7D or 5D, and you can, you know, you've got a couple of stops up your sleeve as it is. So all of these things combine to ensure that you can photograph your subjects in the light you see them. And that is often the reason why we want to take a photo. Like you just said, Bruce, you saw Max in this gorgeous light. And what would have happened if you'd said, look, I'll take this picture and the flash had popped up? Would have been awful.
Yep.
Would have been absolutely awful.
Yep.
So, you know, and your whole reason for having taken the photo in the first place would have been completely negated by the fact that this awful flash popped up.
Yeah.
And, you know, would have been completely
just
ruined.
Just drowned it. Yep.
So give it a try, everybody. And if you want to, of course, let us see some of your pictures.
Yeah, absolutely. If you've got a picture you want to share with everyone that's listening, by all means, email it through to studio@audiotu.com.
Especially if it's a successful available light photo. That's what we want to see after tonight's podcast,
definitely.
Don't we?
Definitely.
And of course, please keep us posted as to any techniques you want us to enlighten you on.
Yep, for sure. With regards to the survey, we've got a little surprise coming. So check out the homepage at audiotu.com in the coming days. There'll be
something cool, is it, Bruce?
Something to entice people to fill in the survey. I'll say no more at this point.
All right, mum's the word.
Absolutely. All right, Shelton, well, thank you for that.
My pleasure.
And we'll talk with you next week.
Looking forward to it, Bruce. Thanks, mate.
See ya.
See you soon.
You've been listening to another Fresh Picked Pod from audiotu.com. Audio to You delivers the best quality podcasts direct to your desktop or portable.
You be the boss.
Hear what you want to hear
when you want to hear it.
Hey, now that's a good idea.
Audiotu.com. Hit us today.
And remember,
Control D to bookmark.
Audiotu.com.